And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Wednesday, January 15th at 1:07 in the afternoon. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with Ag Director Bridget Riedel, and we've got some warmer weather finally heading our way. We've got we had some sleet showers this morning. That doesn't happen too often. That's pushed southward towards Alex if you're heading south on 94. Now, as we look to the north, there's a few more sleet showers between about Hillsboro and Mayville. Also, a little batch south of Thief River Falls. That's moving southward. So we could still see an isolated light sleet shower, if you will, during the afternoon. But increasing sunshine and temperatures out there, what a difference. We're in the teens right now to near 20 in Lakes Country. And you go into areas just to the west of Fargo, Galesburg's at 32, mid-30s up towards Grand Forks, while we're stuck in the 20s here in the FM area down south towards Wahpeton. So there's warmer weather just out to the west, and it looks like it's finally making its way towards the area, which is good news because we've got some Arctic air on the way for this upcoming weekend, Bridget.
Well, we realize that we're going to have a little bit of sunshine and so forth right now, and we'll prepare for the colder weather that's moving in later this week, but normal days in January. To those who had some of those sleet showers earlier today, I'd be curious to know, how are your roads? Because for the most part, with the sun coming out, things are warming up. That's going to help. Some of those side roads were probably slick and maybe still are. I think our major highways are open, but if you are hearing any of those road reports, or you're on the road today, maybe you're hauling grain, anything like that, let us know how those look, because we'll want to share that with your friends and neighbors. And you can reach us on our phone line at 701-293-9000. You can also send emails ag or weather@flagfamily.com. So weather-wise, it's going to cool off, but we're going to keep this for a day or so, Dean.
Yeah, it looks like it, Bridget. We'll enjoy the milder weather, with temperatures today and tomorrow expected to be pretty close to the freezing mark. In some areas, will be a few degrees warmer than that. It's the only problem with today is the winds are really going to ramp up this afternoon. That could cause a little blowing snow, especially in open areas with a little bit of light drifting, could lead to slippery travel. So keep that in mind if you're out and about for later this afternoon. Then tonight we'll dip down into the low 20s, and tomorrow we'll have lighter winds. Under partly cloudy skies, we'll have highs, again, pretty close to the freezing mark. Now, Friday, Arctic front hits, and we'll have a morning high right around freezing, and then falling temperatures and very windy conditions in the afternoon. We're looking at wind gusts over 40 on Friday afternoon as temperatures fall from the 20s into the teens. And the weekend, it is going to be cold. Coldest air of the season so far heading our way, with temperatures on Saturday about one above, and then highs on Sunday between 5 and 10 below, morning lows between 18 and 23 below. And we're looking at wind chills Sunday into Monday, anywhere between 30 to 45 below across the area. I think in the FM area, we'll probably be closer to about 35 below. I think the colder wind chills are going to be in the Northern Valley, where, yeah, there's some indications 45 below will easily be reached in the Northern Valley. So dangerously cold weather for this upcoming weekend. Make sure, please, have that winter weather survival kit packed in your vehicle. You don't want to break down in this weather. Thankfully, there's not going to be a lot of snow, although I do think we'll see a quick burst of snow Friday on the Arctic front, where we could pick up a half inch or less. But if it falls at the same time those winds are strong, we could have some reduced visibility on Friday for a brief period of time. So keep that in mind if you're doing any traveling here over the next few days.
For those of you who are on your church councils or organizing events for Sunday, please keep that in mind with those bitter cold temperatures. You need to consider what may be the case of, you know, if you have elderly who want to come out to services and might not always be good. I mean, this happens this time of the year where occasionally we just have to say we can't have services because we don't want people out on the road. Certainly don't want anybody to get stranded or frustrated with trying to get a vehicle started, all those types of things. So I'm sure some of those decisions will be made later on this week. Hate to see not having a church service, but also got to keep parishioners safe. And this weather update is sponsored by Ryan Bonesack. He is with Equitable AgriFinance. providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing. He's here to help farmers and ranchers, and especially right now as we get into the new year, many of you are making some of those decisions. Please give Ryan a call at 701-261-6529. He'd be happy to help you out.
Excellent. Excellent. And I don't know about you, Bridget, but I've had a lot of what's the word with our ag community about the lack of snow and lack of moisture so far? Any worries yet, or we're more kind of concerned about what happens as we get into March and early April?
We'll worry about it in March and April. I mean, right now, if you have a warm-up in March and you have all this snow, that's going to be a concern for livestock. You worry about scours. You worry about having to move all the snow. You worry about animals having to just be in their pens with too much, and it's hard to clean out. So right now, we're not going to get in a bit of a panic about it. We'll worry about that as it gets closer to spring. Some of the discussions that folks are having, they'll really have to do with autonomy and tractor updates. Right now, we just completed the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And at that, John Deere once again was a standout in the crowd. There were several other farm equipment manufacturers. But one of the things that John Deere is talking about is, as of right now, with the autonomy that they're using in their machines. So, for example, they are planning to, by 2030, have a completely automated system from the tractor, the planter, and the sprayer in order to be autonomous in the field, meaning you don't have to be there. The machine can take care of planting all on its own. And they are intending to get that done by 2030. So they, at this point, driving is one component that the operator does in the cab, and they haven't removed that judgment, because a good farmer, applicator, planter, whomever's in that cab and is doing a great job, they know how to use the exceptional judgment and understanding of what the equipment is doing and what's going on at the same time. Tillage is usually a pretty relaxing activity, and really that's the perfect starting point to look at using autonomy so that you can reprioritize your labor, meaning you don't have to have as many people doing the same things as they've always done, because you can move them around. Planting, on the other hand, very important, because that's a pass that a farmer can just make one time across that field, and it's all got to be done right. You can't have poor placement on the depth. You can't have loose hoses, something plugged up, etc. And so having someone there helps to keep some of those judgment calls moving along smoothly. So furrow vision is what it's called. And furrow vision will be bundled into full autonomy solutions starting in about 2026. But again, moving towards more full autonomy by the time we get to 2030. One of the other things that John Deere is doing is talking a lot about how they're going to be using more of the See and Spray technology in the field. See and Spray, and by the way, when I talk about John Deere, it is not because I want to slight any of the other manufacturers. They just happen to have the technology that's been on display right now most clearly. All of our colors of farm equipment have something that they're working with. But when we talk about See and Spray, we're talking about self-propelled sprayers that have cameras on the booms, so that once the cameras are extended out, those cameras are taking millisecond pictures all throughout the field as the machine is under operation. So what they are doing is they are snapping photos. There's three cameras per nozzle, and you have all these nozzles that are directed not only forward but backwards, so you have all the angles on the plant, and the cameras are recognizing if you're in a soybean field and there's something out of place. So that's generally the description of a weed. It is a plant out of place, whether it's in between the rows, whether it doesn't match the color or the shape of the leaf that it's supposed to be there. That camera picks it up and does a split second burst of application on that plant, thus looking to save application rates, active ingredient used on the field, as well as what happens with pricing. A question that I don't know if everybody has been able to experience an answer yet is, how do you mix up your batches for that? Because if you plan to spray 100 acres that day, but because of See and Spray, you only sprayed 40, what do you do with the leftover mix, right? You can't just put that back in a jug and save it in many cases, because it will fall out of solution. It can plug up nozzles if it sits in a tank too long, that type of thing. So if anyone is working with a See and Spray sprayer right now and has an answer for me for that, I would love to see it. I haven't had a chance to experiment with the hands-on with the sprayer as much as I'd like to answer that question yet. Nonetheless, these are just some of the automations that John Deere sees going forward. And they are looking to be able to not only use that tractor and planter and sprayer by 2030, there'll be more harvest portions of the autonomy that will happen as well when it comes to combines, grain carts, and so forth. So keep your eyes out. Autonomy is there. It is not taking away jobs. It is helping farmers reprioritize what they can do with their labor on a farm. So again, like I said, Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas had a lot of highlights from the farm fields these days, you could say. So,
and it'll be
very cool.
And it'll be warmer out there than it will be here.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's always warmer in Vegas. And it's warmer where our guest is today. And that's Don Hartman. Don is from New Mexico. He raises cotton and hatch chilies, and he does that in the very southern part of New Mexico. And I'm looking forward to asking Don quite a few questions today about what that looks like. And also, with Don joining us, that gives us an opportunity to do something a little bit fun. We've got tickets for the boat show to give away sometime within this hour. So we're waiting for an opportunity to open up those phone lines for that as well. So we'll get to that and so much more today. Stay tuned. And a welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. We are getting our guests aligned. Sometimes in those rural areas, we don't always have the best of audio connections, cell phone connections. In fact, little pop quiz. If you think about broadband across all of rural America, Dean, do you or Addison want to take a guess? I know we're working to get our guests connected, but take a guess. How many homes in the U.S. lack broadband in the rural areas?
How many? Percentage-wise?
If you do a percentage or, you know, like 5 out of 10 homes or what you think that number is.
Boy, you'd think it would be low with technology we have, but I'm going to say 50%.
I'm going to give it a solid 3 out of 10.
30%?
Yeah.
Okay.
Addison is right. When you go across the U.S., on average, 3 out of 10 homes do not have quality broadband internet.
What do I win?
So when we think about...
Addison, you win the boat show tickets that we're going to go to one of our listeners today. So you probably just made one of our listeners mad.
Let's go.
Oh, man. For Addison, he wins our adoring adoration for all the work he does behind the scenes. That's the first thing we're going to give him. But yeah, 3 in 10 homes. And when you think about that, as we want to work from home, kids have days off from school and need quality internet. If you are trying to use telemed and you don't have good phone connections, all of these things compound what you try to do on a daily basis. So if you are in an area where you have great phone connections and great internet, count yourself amongst some of the lucky ones. Not everybody else gets an opportunity to have that. But those are just some of the things that we see happening in rural America these days. We also know that as work moves forward in Washington, because we have a revitalization with the new administration on what's going to happen with the farm bill, et cetera, we realize that right now we are also working to ensure AM radio continues to be aware that we don't want to lose it in passenger vehicles. That was something that was in previously on the farm bill discussion, but of course that all kind of got laid to the wayside as emergency funding was approved in December. But what we see right now is that, yes, we have to make sure that AM radio continues, because in times where you have cellular service that's down, in the case of emergency, I mean, imagine what's happening with some of the wildfires out in California. Mm-hmm. Their way of hearing emergency news and situations where to go is probably happening mostly through AM radio. So let's not lose that. Even if you're moving to an electric vehicle or just buying newer fossil fuel vehicles, we need to keep those AM radios up and rolling. That's important. So just a couple of the things that we have going on right now. Are we getting our guests along?
Well, he's just calling in right now. We weren't getting any audio for him. So I believe Addison has him on the line right now. So if not,
I've got more fun facts for you.
Let's hit a couple fun facts while Addison lines everything up.
Okay. Something that you should know. I recently acquired my absolute very favorite, The Book of Useless Information. For those of you who don't believe me, it's right here on the live stream. You can see the book in my hands. This, you can see our live stream again on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV. And so this Book of Useless Information even has some fun farm facts in it. One of them is says that pound for pound, hamburgers cost more than a new car. Do that on a pound for pound basis. And especially these days with beef prices. Also, I have never done this, but if you were to milk a reindeer, they have more fat than a cow's milk.
Wow.
So I found that awesome. Then we have sheep's milk is used to produce Roquefort cheese. Also something that you probably didn't know or were aware of. So there.
This would be
next
fun.
Next time you're at trivia.
Yeah, that'd be fun for a nice little trivia party, right?
Absolutely. This is why I keep it handy. I want to win. So I believe we've got Don joining us today. Don, how are things in New Mexico?
I'm here. I apologize for the bad connection. I had 4 bars of 5G, so I don't know. I could hear and see you guys fine, but apparently you guys couldn't see or hear me. But
well, it happens to me when I'm out on the road all the time. I get it. It's okay.
Well, we're having quite a windy, blustery day here in southwest New Mexico, so I'm just out spreading some fertilizer, trying to get some ground ready for spring.
So, okay, tell me what your area looks like. Everybody thinks about New Mexico and just probably pictures desert, but that's not really the case where you are.
Well, no, we're surrounded by mountains. We're kind of in a valley, and all of our water is pumped from our own little aquifer here called the Members Valley Basin, and our annual rainfall is about 7 inches a year, so everything that we grow has to be irrigated. Yeah, and we are 100% full drip irrigation. We have buried drip tape in the ground, and it's kind of like a lawn sprinkler. It's set up in zones, and yeah, we do all of our fertigation and chemigation all through the drip, and it's all controlled by computer. And I got to tail end a little bit of your conversation about sea and spray and autonomy, and that is a very interesting subject. And being part of Outstanding Farmers, we're sponsored by John Deere, and so we had a chance a couple years ago to see John Deere's new See and Spray technology, because one of our guys that we dealt with Deere, was leading the team on that, and also the planter that does the injection right at the seed with fertilizer. So that was kind of a cool deal. But yeah, we're surrounded by mountains. It does look like desert. We have a lot of mesquite out in the brush. We have to have water right, and the water right is tied to the land. Then for 100 years, and the basin is closed. So you can't just go out and grub off and put in new land. It has to have historical water rights. Or you have to transfer water rights from somewhere that has it to where you want it. And there's lots of caveats to that.
Okay.
It is.
I tell you what, Don, you have given me so many notes for us to talk about. We're not even close to just the production of hatched chilies, but the water rights, the fertigation, the chemigation. Before we hit our bottom of the hour news, I have a quick question for you. You were talking about John Deere, and you were saying, you know, the placement of fertilizer with the seed. I think you were talking about the exact shot system from John Deere.
Yes. Right. Right.
Okay. As a farmer, what's your opinion for your operation when it comes to Furrow Vision, exact shot, See and Spray? Is it a good fit for what you normally do, or is it something that is down the road for your farm?
Well, for us, I would say it's probably down the road, because we can do the same thing pretty much with our drip irrigation. Because, you know, drip tape, if the ground was perfectly flat, our drip tape is buried 7 to 8 inches under the ground. And then we plant right on top. So all of our tractor's equipment is GPS, RTK, you know, sub-inch accuracy, and so we plant right on top of that drip tape. Well, that water goes through an emitter and seeps out right there in the root zone. So we have kind of the same thing already. So for us, it's probably not viable. but there is a company close to us who uses similar technology. They're a very small mom-and-pop operation, and they make thinning equipment for lettuce, sugar beets, chili, whatever, and they have the same type of technology, and they can thin, you know, because we plant chili, we plant about 4 pounds of seed per acre, and then we'll go back, because I tell everybody growing chili is like raising sheep. It's just looking for an excuse to die.
Hey, that's also lentils. They try to die too. Oh,
yeah, so we go in and we plant thick, and then once we have a good stand established, when the plants are about 2 to 3 inches tall, between 3 and 4 leaves, true leaves, then we'll go in with either a machine or a crew, and we will thin it so that we have, you know, space for the chili plants to grow. And we try to space them about 10 inches apart. We'll leave 1 or 2 plants every 10 inches throughout the whole field. And chili is very labor intensive. It's all harvested by hand. So anyway, I don't go to commercial or.
Right. Yeah, Don, we're coming up here on bottom of the hour break. So when we come back, if you have any questions for Don, feel free to give us a call, 701-293-9000 on our Red Wing Shoe Hotline. Again, that's 701-293-9000. I know Bridget and myself have a ton of questions for you, Don, when we come back. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus, 1:38 in the afternoon. I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. Our guest today is Don Hartman. Don farms down in southwestern New Mexico. And Don, had a question for you here. So you were mentioning that that the land is tied to the basin. Was that correct? Did I hear that right?
The water rights.
The water rights. Okay. Now, is that shared? I was doing some reading on it. It looks like this goes all the way down into Mexico. So is this something that is shared with our neighbors to our south, or is this, like you said, strictly tied to the land that it's on?
Well, the basin does creep into Mexico some, but the jurisdiction stops at the border. So the state has water right law that was put into place back in the early 50s, I believe, maybe earlier than that, you know, before they encouraged people to come and grow land and try to farm. And then as more and more people came in, they saw the depletion of the aquifer. So then there was lawsuits back and forth, and a judge adjudicated water rights. So anyone that had already been farming the land up to a certain date was given a water right, and then they closed the basin. So there was no more farmland allowed to come into production. And so that kind of keeps us from over pumping our aquifer. And yes, we've been in a drought, so the aquifer is still dropping some, but as far as Mexico, that's a sore subject with me, and I might not go there because politics.
Sure.
You know, plays a part in that. And in Mexico, anything goes. You know, if you've got a well rig and you want to grow land and you punch a hole and you find water, it's yours. And so there's no jurisdiction. They're still pulling water off of our aquifer without any rules or regulations. So we might want to buy subject slightly, if you get my drift.
Gotcha. Nope. Totally understand. Yep. Totally understand.
And then they
No, you finish your thought, Don, and then I have a production question for you about the chilies, but please continue.
Well, they've gotten stricter, and so there's a high concentration of farms in the middle of the county, and then as you go out further away from town, you might say, the farm population starts to get more scattered and decrease. So right in the middle of town, they've declared it a critical management area. So if you want to expand your farm, you pretty much can't if you're in that critical management area. you can't move water right from a non-critical area into what they consider a critical area. Now, if I want to move out, I can do that. I can move my water right from my farm if I decide to move 10 miles further west or south out of that critical management area. I can stop production on my farm, put in an application to move that water right, and as long as it's moving out into a non-critical area, then there's a good chance they will allow that to keep from overpumping right here in this.
Well, your management system, I mean, that actually, you guys have really protected yourselves in a lot of ways from overuse and, like you said, the aquifer dropping. And I'm curious, with 7 inches of annual rainfall, do you have other options? Are cotton and chilies your best option? Are they more of a drier season crop for you down there? Or are you looking at other things that would be even more drought tolerant as time goes on?
Well, it's all economics. Right now, cotton is just like any other commodity. My first crop of cotton I raised in 1989, I sold for 85 cents. And I looked the other day and cotton is 67 cents right now. So,
oh, yikes.
We have a lot of cost because that drip irrigation, the initial installation cost is about $2,200 to $2,500 an acre just for the drip system. So we have to plant high value, potential high return crops to try to pay off that investment. So that said, cotton, I mean, we grow grain sorghum, we grow some hay, we grow other crops, but the vegetables are what pay our bills. And so we plant onions and chili peppers, and then there's some lettuce, and I have done seedless watermelons and kind of stuff like that. So there's a lot more risk in it, but the potential return is a lot better. And cotton and other commodities are pretty volatile and low value. I mean, we can make high yields, but the high yields don't make up for prices. So we kind of
stick with those. But with crop like chilies and watermelons, what's your harvest like? Very labor intensive is just a guess.
It's chaos. Yeah. Yeah. Watermelons is not quite as labor intensive. Yeah. We have hand labor and watermelons, but we have a smaller crew. The chili peppers, when we pick them green for processing, it's all hand labor. They don't have a machine yet. They can't figure it out. We can pick jalapenos with a machine, but we can't do green chili. It's just more fragile, a bigger, bushier plant. Its fruit is all different shapes, where a jalapeno is uniform in shape. A chili pepper can be straight. It can be curled. It can have a twist. So it's very hard to get a machine to pick chili. So we get H2A people. I bring in a small crew of 10 about probably in May to do some weeding and that kind of thing. And then I bring another batch in the end of July, and then we go into harvest. And the onions are all still hand harvested here because we still get a premium for hand clipped. Because they're a cleaner onion, you don't have as many roots. You don't have a big, long, dry neck sticking out of the onion. So we still get a premium to justify the hand labor. But if hand labor gets much more expensive, we're going to have to go to mechanical harvest on the onion. But I bring in a crew of total about 40, 45 people, and we'll pick about 2 to 3 semi-loads of peppers a day with that crew.
Semi-loads.
Yeah. 42,000 to 45,000 pound loads.
Okay. Yeah. This is maybe going to be kind of a silly question, but are you putting these into like live bottom trailers that we would use for potatoes and such, or what kind of semi-trailer are you using?
Well, the boxes, we put boxes. They're PVC food containers. I think you've probably seen them in apple orchards and some of those. They're a white box. And the chili box is 4x4. They're 4 foot square. And they'll hold about 1,000 pounds. So we put them on a field trailer, pull it with a tractor in the field, and the guys pick, and then as they pick in a 10-gallon bucket. And as they get a bucket full, they put the trailer. We have two guys on the trailer, one on each side, and they dump it into one of those boxes. And in return, they throw a little chip, like a poker chip, into the bucket, the guy's bucket. And then that's how we keep track of how much he picks, and at the end of the day, we pay on piece rate, so he gets X amount of dollars for every one of those chips, and that's how they get paid. And then once the chili is in the box, the trailer's full, we'll put 6 to 8 boxes on a trailer. Once the wagon's full, we drive it out, pull another one in behind it, and we take it up by a loading station, and we take a forklift and unload them off the trailer, put them on a, we'll double stack them on a flatbed semi truck, and then we'll put more empties on the trailer. He goes back to the field, and it's the same thing over and over. And once we get 44 to sometimes 48, I don't know if the New Mexico DOT is not listening. So yeah, we'll put 48 boxes. We can weigh upwards. We can gross upwards 90,000-95,000 sometimes. And then we haul it to a processor. And the processor here in town is the largest chili processor in the world. And they do jalapenos, green chili, and tomatillos. And you may not like what I have to say, but you corn bean guys killed us with NAFTA and the North American Free Trade Agreement, because you guys pushed markets for corn and beans. Well, when you negotiate, somebody's got to give and somebody's got to take. So Mexico and some of these other countries gained access to our vegetable market, and in return, we got access to their corn and bean markets.
So yep, I know exactly what you're saying.
So when that happened, it, you know, basically the U.S. vegetable fruit growers got sacrificed. And so we can't compete. It's hard for us to compete with Mexico and their fresh produce because of labor and other, you know, factors. But green chili is very time sensitive. A jalapeno pepper will keep under refrigeration for 30 days. A green chili, you have 2 to 3 days, and then it just starts to melt and fall apart.
Oh.
So
wow.
Mexico, you know, if they're close to the border, they might import a little bit here into the U.S., but I signed chili contracts yesterday, and I asked them how much chili, green chili, was coming from Mexico, and they said 98.6% is domestic. So there's only, what, 1.5% that's coming from Mexico. But on the flip side, probably 99% to 100% of all the jalapenos and tomatillos are imported from Mexico and run through this plant here.
Sure.
And so, are paid
Don,
by ton.
Okay.
So we roll
over. Paid by the ton. Heard you say that. Right. I do have one quick comment. Several of your friends up here who knew that you were going to be on today have said that the onions that you raise are sweet like apples. Like you can pick one up and eat it that way. What kind of variety of onion are you raising?
Well, there's several different varieties. We raise some sweet yellow onions, and they are, and part of the reason, you know, people can't fathom farming in the desert. Well, the desert has some of the highest quality fruit, whether it be grapes. We have vineyards here with grapes, whether it be green chili, onions, whatever. The quality of the fruit is extremely high here because of the large swing in temperature between day and night, because we're in a high desert. Our elevation is about 4320, about, you know, 4,320 feet above sea level. So we're a high desert. So there'll be 40-degree swings between day and nighttime temperatures, and that causes the sugars to move up into the fruit, whether it be tomatoes, chili, watermelons, onions, grapes, whatever, regardless of what it is. And so we have a very high-quality fruit that we grow here. By fruit, I mean chili, onions, you know, any of that stuff that's edible. It's just a taste. And so, yeah. And we grow we grow all colors of onions here. I mean, they grow lettuce, cabbage, spinach. I do seedless watermelons. What else? I mean,
Don, your agriculture down there is so varied and interesting. And you're right. We held off on the politics today, but just agronomically speaking, you have so much to share in that region. And thank you for taking the time to visit with us today. That we really, really appreciate.
Well, thank you for having me. And I know this conversation can go on further. So if you're interested in learning more, don't hesitate to call and I'll be glad to help and talk about it.
You are my new Southern expert. Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Well, you know what they say about an expert? An ex is a has-been and a spurt is a drip under pressure.
Jeez, I was just going to say you were more than 50 miles from home, so you're an expert.
But thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Don. And please, everyone, stick around. We want to make sure to give away a set of tickets to the boat show and check weather. Folks, we are back, and we want to make sure to give away a set of tickets for the boat show. January 21st, 24th, and 26th. That is next week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We need caller number 3. Hustle up, 701-293-9000. Dean is going to go ahead and take caller 3 and let us know who that is.
We will. So you're caller 1. Hurry up and try again. And you're caller 2. Just missed it. Try again. And who do we have here?
Raleigh King.
Raleigh? Congrats, man. You're caller number 3. Way to go. Have you ever been to the boat show? Have you been to the boat show before?
Yes, I have. Oh, yeah, but it's been a few years.
Great. Fantastic. We're going to put you on hold here, and our producer, Addison, will get all the info from you.
Thank you.
All right. Good deal. So let's take a quick look at radar. If you're looking north from the FM area, you'll notice some white streaks to the clouds. There's a little bit of precip right now in form of a sleet shower just to the south. East of Georgetown, moving southward. So this will clip areas just to the east of the FM area. We might get a brief light sleet shower here over the next hour. But after that, we're looking at partly cloudy skies. Temperatures are currently warming up. We're sitting now at 26, but temperatures in the low to mid 30s out in the western part of the county. So warmer weather moving in, but it won't last more than a couple of days. Coldest air of the season heading our way for this upcoming weekend. So for Bridget, myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.